step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 616. I am Lisa Sheps, your hostess with the mostest. I am joined across country with my co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live as we do during the pandemic on KOOP.org. Also during the pandemic, we are homegrown and pre-recorded. Don't go away.
Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
I got an audition.
I started the story.
Rehearsal pianist.
So where are we eating?
I'm moving to Playboy.
The publisher called me.
I'm doing a rewrite.
My parents are coming.
I saw My Fair Lady.
I rewrote the rewrite.
I sort of enjoyed it.
I threw out the story.
I'm meeting an agent.
We'll all get together on Sunday. We're opening doors, singing, here we are. We're filling up days on a dime.
It is Wednesday, May 12th. 2021. On the show today, we have Austin Playhouse, as well as we have the new Gatsmata, which is now called the Heller Awards for Young Audiences. And then, of course, we're going to have some talking of the world of theater around the world, around the country, and in Biloxi, Mississippi. Stay with us.
I called the producer.
I sent off the one act.
Clearly we roll along. You know, I just want to remind our audience, they may have forgotten, there is a movie of being shot now, Merrily We Roll Along, and it's done by Richard Linklater. I think it's Richard Linklater who did About a Boy. Mm-hmm. And he's taking 10 years to do it. So stand by. It'll be out soon.
Well, I mean, About a Boy took 10 years too.
I know.
It's his bag these days. I know when he announced it, I was so like, not musical theater was not where I guessed his next thing would be, but I kind of love it.
I'm with you. So we play that because there is a big whoop to do in New York this last week when Governor Cuomo announced that New York will open and he announced that Broadway would open. I think he said June or July. But of course, the Broadway League and everybody on Broadway said, nope, it'll be in the fall. But there have been a whole bunch.
Hold it.
Yeah. But there have been a whole bunch of announcements. So
I was like, but then dates just kept rolling on out.
Yep. So the week of, I think, September 17th is when most shows are reopening. Six is already talked about previews in before that, I think. I think they're going to actually open in October. So they start previews in September. Anyway, but it's very exciting.
I think I saw previews in September.
Yeah.
You know, things like Music Man are not opening till February. I think previews start December 20th or something. So there are shows that are still opening next year, but you know, they were still a new show with no rehearsal. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah, I read I read the press release, but then the New York Times article, which was written by, I'm going to guess Jesse Green, but nope, Michael Paulson.
I was going to say, I think it was Michael Paulson this time.
You were about to say the correct thing. And according to this article, about 30 shows are planning to begin performances before the end of 2021. 30. It's pretty amazing. And of course, Phantom already announced they're going to have their performances starting in October 22nd. Hamilton, Lion King, Wicked, all there. American Utopia, Chicago, Aladdin, Come From Away. So that's all good. And he says there are some uncertainties about, you know, whether masks are going to be required or what's going to happen. So there's a lot of stuff still left up in the air.
I don't know if you saw the Broadway actors, but there was a lot of people not happy and screaming. And I saw people going at it on Twitter.
Not happy about what?
They were all like, what do you mean we're opening? We don't have protocols in place. We just can't open. And I mean, I want to say it was like Stephanie Block and Laura Benanti and a whole bunch of people. And I was like, what?
Did I
miss all these meetings? I'm confused.
Yeah, they just screamed at Equity for being too... I didn't see any of that. So, but, you know, I don't.
Oh, yeah.
It
showed up in my feed. I wasn't looking for it. I'm like, what did I miss? I thought we had meetings. I'm very confused right now. I'm very confused.
It did not show up in my feed, but that's so, you know, this is all going to work out. I think that by the time it all opens, that it will all be worked out. I'm trying to find this piece in the, here it is. So the new plays announced for Broadway are all by Black writers. Two of them are commercial productions, Thoughts of a Colored Man by Kenan Scott II and Shionanwe Nwandu Passover. And I'm not sure whether that I'm pronouncing those names correctly. There's also Clyde's new play by Lynn Nottage. For second stage, and Lackawanna Blues, a one-man show by Ruben Santiago Hudson. So, you know, we're all very concerned that Broadway League has been a little tone deaf and kept blinders and ear plugs in talking about the BIPOC community and theater community, but at least it looks like there's some things. I mean, I was worried that Music Man would be the first thing to open up, which is not a good thing.
No, and it's
go ahead.
Yeah, I'm on the same page with you, but it's not the first thing. But what I found crazy was, do you realize the August Wilson Theater has never had a play written by a BIPOC person?
No, I didn't.
Until now, Passover is going, I believe it's Passover going in there. I think it's Passover. But do you realize, named after a Black playwright, has never had a production in the building until now.
Shame on us.
That mind-boggled me.
Yep, shame on us. But it's kind of exciting, the thought of opening up. And I just heard on my podcast today on Broadway, and I was listening to it as I was getting myself together today, so I don't have any of the details. But evidently, the Broadway League, which is fraught to begin with, has hired a woman, and I do not know her name, but as a equity, diversity, and inclusion officer.
Oh, they hired an EDI officer. They mentioned they were going to. So
they hired her. I don't know who she is, but evidently she's got a lot of good credentials. So that's at least a step that they're taking in the right direction. All right. Well, and so with this opening, I believe, I don't know whether a date has been set, but let me see if I can click on this link. The Tony Awards have spoken.
Oh, did they hear us talking? They saw the highest have a date before them.
Yeah. So their CBS and Broadway League are working together so that Aaron Tveit can accept his Best Actor Award. They don't have a date, but they are in talks, and they are in talks with CBS, according to this article.
I thought CBS had the contract.
Yeah. So this was from showbiz411.com, which I've never heard of, but there you go.
Yeah, but here's the whole thing. CBS has the contract. That was like Gary Gnu's no news.
No, but they're I know that, but they are in talks with CBS to find a date. So cool. Why is that funny?
Because I thought they were in talks to find a date last year. So I'm just laughing. Here we are a year later.
Oh, that was almost a year ago. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know.
That's why I'm laughing.
Yeah. I don't, quite frankly, I don't think they were ever in talks. Well, they were never in talks to find a date. So let's talk to the folks at the ex Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards, now the Heller Awards for Young Audiences. Hey-ya is so much better than Gatsmata.
It's so much better. But now all I want to sing is Outkast now and go, hey-ya, hey-ya.
That's lost on me, but it sounds like fun.
Outcasts are phenomenal. But yes, it reminds me of the Outcast song.
Don't know them, but I do know Ginger Morris.
I do too. I love that Ginger Morris.
Well, let's listen to our interview.
Okay.
Nicole Shiro, you know, I've always felt that the children are our future.
Did you? I know. If you teach them well, let them. Oh, gosh, I don't remember.
Set them free. Let them go free.
Yes. Thank you.
If they love you, they'll come back. So what that translates for me here in Austin, Texas, is what we used to call the Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards, a.k.a. GATSMATA, which has blessedly renamed themselves the Heller Awards for Young Audiences, or HEYA, and Ginger Morris and Ronan Malomo are here to talk about this year's awards, which last year's was virtual, where you did the name change. And then this year, I don't know what it is. So I'm going to ask you to tell me what it is.
All right. Well, thanks for having us on today. We're super excited to be here.
Having you on.
We do.
Y'all are so sweet. I always get very excited when I get to talk to Lisa and Nicole. So Heller Awards for Young Artists. We renamed, like you said, last year. And
I gave the whole interview in your introduction. So
we're done. We're good.
We're done.
We'll figure out something to talk about.
I think we will.
So this year it is going to be virtual again. It is going to be streamed on YouTube Premiere. It's going to be on May 23rd. Yes. Thank you, Ronan. I've got hand signals from Ronan.
Okay. I'm going to stop you and interject a question. You said YouTube Premiere. Is that different from YouTube?
Oh, it's just YouTube.
Oh, it's a YouTube Premiere. I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. You won't get to, you can't fast forward. You can't see who wins before they win. Yeah.
And if you come in late, you miss the beginning.
That's true.
Yeah.
So I think you can go backwards, right?
It'll stay on there. It'll stay up. But yeah.
I think you can rewind. I think I've rewound before, but you cannot fast forward and miss it.
Can't go forward. Mm-hmm. That's true. So
story of my life.
We're excited. We were sort of talking about, you know, what can we do this year that's different. And so we filmed the finale. So we did have students from different schools. Normally the finale is two students from each participating school. This year participating has just been it's just challenging, as we all know. Everybody sort of in the fall, there was kind of nothing going on and all the students were a little confused and lost about what to do. And then all of a sudden people figured out to do stuff. So the spring was just like piled on top. But we were excited to get a pretty strong number of students out there to film the finale. And we filmed it all on the terrace at the Long Center. And so it is a very fun, sort of exciting outdoor, you know, edited piece that we'll end the show with that really does celebrate all of what the, you know, schools and students have done.
So on the awards of the past that were done at the Long Center, there was an opening and a closing by that group of people. Do you also have an opening you're making it? I wish our audience could see your face right now.
She's making a face like if you like only knew, and I'm not going to tell you today.
But I am going to tell you today. A dear friend of mine named Justin Kirchhoff, he has been filming this sort of archival video that we have every year of the awards, and is an incredible cinematographer and videographer and director, and you know, has a great resume for himself, and has just come in and you know, done some great work for us over the past couple years. He decided to get much busier during the pandemic, and he opened a production house locally. It's in South Austin. It's called Co-Production House. And so we partnered with them, and we are actually the first, we were the first ones to like make anything in their new studio. And their studio has an LED volume wall, which is what they make the Mandalorian show on. Okay. And there's not another one in, I don't think there's another one in Texas. The only ones we know of are LA and New York. Mm-hmm. And this is just like this crazy cool new technology. It's like the world's, it's like a 3D in real time green screen. I don't know another way to explain it. So we filmed the opening number actually this last weekend in the studio. And the opening number, Alan Robertson wrote a new opening number that's called Everything is Possible. And it is very, very much speaks to where we are right now, not directly, kind of indirectly speaks to where we are in a moment of change and with young people choosing what that change looks like. And the idea that when you go into the world with the, you know, knowing that everything is possible and you work together, you can, you know, what can you do? And with, you know, between young people singing and dancing and telling a story and this new technology, it is a really cool, if we can't be in a theater together, it's kind of the next best thing for us. And you know that normally we have our, lead nominees do a medley together. And so we've done a similar thing. We had two categories this year of solo competition, and one was for seniors and one category is for freshmen, sophomore, juniors. And we made a medley, so a little snippet of each of the songs that they submitted. And then we also filmed those in front of this volume wall. So each of them, you know, the girl who's singing part of Wishing You Were Somehow Here Again from Phantom of the Opera literally looks like she is at the graveyard in 3D. And it is just a screen, a girl, and a box fan.
So with this technology, does it look like there are things in front of her at the same time as behind? Is that how 3D it is?
Ronan, I'll let you talk about how that...
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So essentially what it is a giant LED screen, and the technology that is behind it is essentially the same technology that they build video games in. So it's these like 3D environments that you can like fly through and see all the different elements, but it's all on the screen behind. And so the way that we, as well as The Mandalorian in a much higher budget setting, do is you place practical props and set pieces in front of the people, and then behind everything is digital. And there's a sensor on the camera that as you're moving, it's essentially telling the world to move with you. So you're seeing like you're moving. If you turn the camera to the left, the gravestone that she's standing next to also shifts. So you're seeing what that actual perspective would look like rather than like a static green screen.
Not to make you laugh, Lisa, but they use this technology in King Kong the musical.
Okay.
No way.
They're solving for here is with a traditional green screen, in order for it to work properly, the camera has to be static. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as you move the camera, everything gets, so it sounds like they're fixing for that. So that's awesome. Yeah. That sounds amazing.
It was cool because the studio is set up, I mean, it looks like a real studio. So when the students walked in one at a time and they were like, oh, this is real. And there's like a huge monitor. So you see on the monitor exactly what the camera looks like. So the students would be standing, you know, in front of the screen, and there's a camera on them. And then they look over and they see what the monitor I wish we had filmed the moments when they looked over and went, oh, this is really cool.
Well, let's talk for a moment about the the awards as a whole. So in the past, as I've been involved with it, it has grown from like 15 schools to 22 or 25 schools. How many schools are involved this year?
Well, that's a great question. I wish I could answer it with a number.
Because it was more done individually by individual students, correct?
Yeah, it's also just, you know, it's been just such a trying year for teachers and schools trying to figure things out. And we made it as easy as possible to participate. They didn't have to do a musical because most schools could not. Right. And so we changed all the categories to be things that students could submit either alone, or they could have made separately, or, you know, we just tried to make as many. I mean, we have categories like musical theater innovation. Go. Or, you know, wild card, go. You know, like, I mean, there are obviously stipulations, but a lot of sort of broad things that, depending on what your school's abilities and, you know, following protocol for COVID look like for you, you could still participate however you wanted to. So the cool thing about that is that a lot of schools participated that don't normally get to be highlighted in
a year.
That's
what I was wondering. That's
Yeah, so really opened opportunities. And also one of the teachers was talking about how, you know, in a normal year where they're doing a musical, she only can pick certain people to play the leads or the supporting roles that fit those. And then there's all these other students who are awesome, who don't get to really submit something. So it did, you know, offer a lot of opportunities to schools and students that otherwise would not have had them. We did at the beginning of the year have about 31 schools that were saying like, we're going to participate in some way. I think really we ended up with more like 22, something like that, that really were fully involved.
Well, sure. And under the circumstances, that's excellent.
That's a great number. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity to see a few of the videos, and it was really amazing to see the variations that these kids came up with. Some were like, I'm going to stand and sing in front of the camera, and others were much more involved with tricks of the camera and it was quite fun. And I should say that they were all masked and COVID-19 safe. Yeah. So I really enjoyed it. So we know that it's going to be done on YouTube. What date is the premiere? And then afterwards, is it available for people to watch?
Yes, it is Sunday, May 23rd at 7:30 is the showing. And then it will remain on YouTube after. So if people are not available that evening, they can tune in at any time and scrub through or watch the whole thing, however you want to do it.
Awesome. Where do people get information about it?
At the Long Center's website. You can Google Heya Long Center. You can go straight to longcenter.org. We'll have all the information there.
There's lots of stuff there. I think it's amazing. As someone that's been a participant in one way or another in the past several years, I love it. Is the plan for next year to go back to the way it was?
We can never go back. But yes, our plan is to have a live show next spring. Obviously, that is contingent upon what schools are able to do in the fall.
Sure.
So we're ready to do whatever we'll have to do. Yeah. But that's
one of the many downsides of the COVID-19 pandemic was those kids got to perform on the Long Center stage. And that's a big thrill. I know, I was honored to be to announce the nominees one year, and I was nervous getting out on that stage. So, that's just that was amazing for them, and I'd hate for them to lose that experience.
Yeah, I mean, the goal is to get back to that as soon as we safely can.
Awesome. Well, Ginger.
Well, I have to say this: you're doing better than the Tonys. You have a date, and you have a show.
Right. The Tonys announced their nominations 200 days ago, and they have yet to announce when the award ceremony is.
Mm. Ooh.
Okay.
That's not the case with the Hayas. Not at all.
Hayas are going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, thank y'all so much for coming on the show. And I'm looking forward to being part of the premiere.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. It was good to
thank
see
you.
It was good to That Ginger Morris is some special kind of something.
She does keep herself busy, doesn't she?
She does. Oh my God. Busiest working person in show business. But so the Heller Awards were, I'm looking forward to them. And I'm really looking forward, as I mentioned in the interview, for them to come back live at the Long Center, because that's such a treat for those kids.
Yeah, but you know what? I love Ginger. Like, even with people at home, even with people not together, like, she has given this group of youngsters, like, still reason to keep doing stuff, giving them the pump and the cheering to go on. Like, that's phenomenal. And she still created this entire event for them. I mean, having to rethink all the categories, like, she didn't just do the Tonys and go, yeah, we'll do it next year. Yeah. And I think that she's so important. How special.
So let's just say that it's been proven Ginger Morris is not the Broadway League.
No, she's better.
Thing. She's better. Well, awesome. I think we're going to play another song. I don't know if you can hear the sirens going on in the background here, but I'm not in my studio. And they're like lots of noise going off. So I think maybe we've done enough for this half hour. Why don't we take a break and come back after the break?
Let's do it.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa.
And Nicole.
You can also listen to us on koop.org. We are, during the pandemic, pre-recorded, and this time we're being pre-recorded from two different states.
We are.
And my state is, I'm in the state.
You're very Neil Simon today.
I'm in the state of euphoria.
Oh, well, you're also very Neil Simon today.
I am. I am in Biloxi, Mississippi. When I had a lovely steak dinner last night, but that's another story. So we just played another show, keeping with the theme, and there it is. Keeping with the theme. So let me go look at my magic sheet and see what else we want to talk about. Oh, there was a production of I Am My Own Wife. Are you familiar with that show?
Yes, they did it at Zach a few years ago.
They did indeed.
Yes, they did indeed. And I saw this whole, where was this? It was in the Midwest, wasn't it?
It was in Connecticut.
Oh, it was East Coast. Okay.
Yeah, at the Warner Theater in Torrington, Connecticut. And we should say that I Am My Own Wife is the story of a transgender person during Nazi Germany. I actually saw the original in Chicago when I was still workshopping.
I was going to ask you, were you the person who saw the original? I knew someone who saw the original and that was you.
Yeah.
And, It's a pretty powerful piece.
Very powerful. So this Connecticut theater decided, and these are people are just so blind to what's going on in the world, but they hired a cis actor to play the role. A cis actor being a person that was assigned male at birth, not a non-binary or trans actor, of which there are plenty. And so they got some backlash. So they canceled the show.
I was like, they just canceled the whole thing.
Canceled the whole thing. Well, and rightly so. I mean, because they were not, anyway, they were not smart, if you ask me. But I just thought that was interesting. And it just, it boggles my mind in today's day and age. And especially they're in Connecticut. So they're not in an area where they, you know, it's not like they're in Montana where finding an out trans person would be difficult, much less an actor. There's plenty of non-binary and trans people on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree.
Yeah. So shame on them. Let's see what else is in my mat. Oh, so I'm so mad at myself and I couldn't see it because it closed for us last night, which was Sunday night.
And you may have seen it. Secret Garden, the archival version of Secret Garden.
I thought of it this morning and I was so PO'd. I was so PO'd at myself. And I'm like, Lisa, I'm going to go down on a deep dive for people who have little clips posted places. And I'm going to find it for us because yeah. I am so PO'd at myself.
But both of us did the same, but there's a wonderful article. I don't know if you saw it. About what they had to go through to stream this. And it's an article by Sarah Barr in the New York Times talking about how they were just able to do it because there's a lot of moving pieces to air something that was never intended to be aired, which was the archival recording of this piece. So they had to get buy-in from absolutely everybody involved. And then, you know, Equity had to make sure that everybody was paid, but they pulled it off. And I'm really sorry I missed it because I've never seen Secret Garden.
So hauntingly beautiful.
Yeah. We talked about it last week. So, but I thought
it was one of those ones where I really just was like, yeah, I'm going, it'll be a good show. But you know, when you go see the show and then you leave being affected in a way you never expect to be affected. Show was special like that. I was like, yeah, didn't expect in that when I went in there.
Yeah. Well, but we missed it, both of us. So
we did.
That's bad. Shame on us.
I'm spanking myself.
Don't do that. Let's listen to some music.
I got one for you. How about Opening Up from Waitress?
Opening Up from Waitress, here it is.
The day starts like the rest we've seen, another carbon copy.
Hey, Waitress should come back, don't you think?
I feel like they were. I feel like I read something about them, but I could be wrong. Yep. Maybe I read about them. I think it opened in another country. That might be it.
I think that's a Korea show I have not seen because I could. There was some reason why when it came here, I was not able to see it. And I was
so very... Don't care. The movie drives me nuts that I have desire to see the show.
Your opinion notwithstanding, I was very disappointed that I didn't get to see it. So
yeah, I know. I'm a very rare bird on that, and that's okay.
Okay. Let's go to our second interview with Austin Playhouse and talking about the Agatha Christie show. The
Mysterious Affair Styles.
It's Styles. Thank you for telling me. Let's just jump right in. Here it is.
Nicole and I are sitting here in the Zoom room, and we are basically hanging out and hoping to be treated with Belgium chocolates.
Whoa, wouldn't that be?
Don't know why, but I'm just feeling like I want some chocolates.
I would love some too.
And we're here with some lovely folks from Austin Playhouse. Of course, we have Laura Haddock, artistic director of Austin Playhouse, and Ben Wolf, performer extraordinaire, who we have not had on the show during the pandemic, and we're happy to have you here. Welcome back to Offstage and on the Air, you guys.
Thanks for having us.
And of course, my Belgium reference was to Hercule Poirot. I can never pronounce it.
Hercule Poirot.
I was close. And his French accent. So y'all are doing the Mysterious Affair at Styles. Laura, tell us about this show.
So this was Agatha Christie's first published novel, was The Mysterious Affair at Styles, and it introduces everyone to Hercule Poirot, one of her her most well-known and beloved characters. And we've done was originally going to be a stage adaptation, and now it's a sort of screen adaptation in our pandemic times. So we've made this kind of hybrid piece where some pieces of it we filmed outdoors. They'll look a little more like a movie almost. I'm in the middle of editing, so that's the goal at any rate. And then some pieces we're filming inside a theater, and those will feel a little more like you're an audience member attending a show. And we have a little bit being remote recorded as well with a couple performers. So we're really, we're excited to bring this show, this story, this kind of great murder mystery with Ben playing Poirot to life. And we're also excited to kind of experiment with how we do film theater, this kind of digital theater world, and right now. So it's a lot of fun new things for us at Austin Playhouse.
So this was an actual pivot. So this was planned as a stage play. And then you're sticking with your plan, but just pivoting.
Well, I'd started working on it a little bit before the pandemic hit, just kind of what would be fun adaptations. I have long, for over a decade, thought that Ben would make a brilliant Poirot, and have been sort of looking for a great vehicle for that and waiting for him to be ready to tackle that. And I thought, you know, middle of the pandemic, no better timing than to take on a great iconic role. So we had it, and then we announced it as part of our Ghostlight season. And so it was announced to be part of that, but we've been doing these one woman show productions and mm-hmm. sort of had that template down. So we thought, what if we throw 16 actors at a production that we're doing virtually? And because the rate of the vaccinations has increased so quickly, we've actually kind of changed and adapted how we're able to film this show. So it's been a lot of pivoting, but it's an original adaptation that I did for the Austin Playhouse Company.
Wonderful. And Ben, obviously you're playing a Poirot, yes. However you pronounce it. And it's great. So tell us how you've been working towards the role. How's this feel? I don't know if this is this your first performance post-pandemic, or have you been doing other stuff and I just haven't seen it?
First performance. I've done, you know, I do voiceover stuff for education.
Sure.
So that's been keeping me busy in terms of being a performer. But this has certainly been its own unique and interesting beast to tackle. As we were working out, you know, what the script was going to be, I decided to take on a directing gig. So then that put me, you know, behind in the whole memorization aspect. And then of course we're rehearsing via Zoom, and you know, I'm a physical actor. I like to be moving, and that's how I get my lines in, and I don't get any of that right now until we sort of get together in person. All of us are vaccinated. That's the only reason we get together in person when we have been. It's been unique and interesting. And we talked about the different Poirots that are out there and who our favorites were, but we certainly wanted to make this our own version of Poirot. We didn't necessarily want to do my imitation of David Suchet or John Malkovich or who, you know, the other versions that are out there. So, we'll see how it plays, but I'm certainly having fun with it.
I was going to mention, he's a fun character, so he's got to be fun to play.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you find it easier to play him knowing that this actual piece is like the introduction to him? So it's kind of like, I guess in some ways, the audience is first meeting him in a way, so... You're first playing him in that way?
Yeah, I mean, like there are obviously, you know, some people may have their own expectations, but in terms of our world and our audience, you know, there are no preset expectations, at least as far as I'm concerned. I'm not letting those creep into my head, because right now I have to keep all the lines in my head. it is certainly freeing to know that, you know, this is the first introduction. And, you know, who knows what the life of Poirot would be in the Playhouse? But you know, we've done multiple Sherlock Holmes shows. So is it possible that then this, you know, every couple of years we do another Poirot? Who knows? You know, and it might then build from there. But doing it,
I'd be down.
Well, and it really is. Okay. It's a fun. We leaned into the humor that is in Agatha Christie's book. And that was one of the surprises for me, because I'm a little more familiar with some of her darker works. We did And Then There Were None, and where you don't really like anybody. Whereas this one, I think I like a lot of the people, and there is just legitimate humor. And I was like, we're not gonna rival BBC Merchant Ivory kind of gorgeous production values, but we can have these really fun, likable, lively, interesting characters and bring those to our audience. So,
so you mentioned that this was a large cast. Who else is in the show?
It is. So in addition to Ben Wolfe and Scott Shipman, who plays Lieutenant Arthur Hastings, our narrator for the piece, we have a huge cast, including Ben Bazan, Tim Blackwood, Robert Dyke, Joseph Garlock, Babs George, Claire Grasso, Sarah Chong Harmer, Huck Huckabee, Toby Miner, Mark Puhay, myself, Sarah Fleming Walker, Ken Webster, Cindy Williams. And I think that wraps it up with Ben and Scott there. 16 actors. Yeah, so it's quite
That's
nice.
A veritable who's who of Austin Theater. That's that's a huge cast.
Well, and we were, again, able to do that because somebody like Mark Puhay, spoiler alert, but he's more of a cameo role. He has, you know, so it's not, with the exception of Scott and Ben, everyone was able to just kind of come in a little bit, and in a way that unless, you know, the 1930s huge cast comedies that used to exist that would have characters come, you know, you can't take it with you. You have a character comes on for one scene, but we don't do those anymore because people have to sit around and backstage for a 5-week run and it doesn't seem fair. But for this, where we could schedule, it's like, hey, here's your rehearsal. Here's we're gonna film you here. And it really opened up the opportunities to get a pretty amazing group involved in this. Eric Graham is our director of photography for this, and he's fantastic also. And is really, really guiding a lot in the process as to how we make this look really good. Robert Fisher is doing our sound design. He's got great thoughts. He's going to be deconstructing some classical music pieces and then reconstructing them for our needs, kind of inspired by the old Hammer horror movies.
Awesome.
It's really fun. Actually, old Universal horror, not Hammer horror. Misspeak there, but it's really, really a lot of fun.
So Laura, how can folks get information on how to see this show?
Our website is austinplayhouse.com, and that's a great way to get information.
Great. And what are the dates? Because we totally didn't ask you that.
Right. We open on May 21st, and then we run for 3 weeks, and there will be mainly live performance options to where we'll have a live Q&A following the screening. And then we may have one or two watch any times for just a brief window for folks.
Wonderful. Well, it sounds amazing. Sounds like a lot of fun. I look forward to seeing it. I'm so glad y'all came on the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yay. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Don't go away. Laura, when you click on the photo, it takes us to Indecent.
Oh, Lord, that's not where we want to go.
Oh, I've done that so many times, but I...
Hercule Poirot. I don't know why I have a problem pronouncing that name, but I do.
I don't know, but I didn't tell Ben that his French was c'est magnifique.
C'est magnifique. It was good to see Ben again. I'm glad he's back out and doing stuff.
Yeah, I haven't seen him in so long. It really was a nice surprise. And I mean, I love Laura. Let's take a one-person show and then do a 16-person show. And yep. I love it.
Yep.
I love Agatha Christie.
I don't know that I've ever seen anything on stage.
Oh, I love it. And Perrault and Marples are my two favorite characters. I love all the series with the two of them in it. It's my jam.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things, and these are things probably I'm sure you know about it, but the Alley Theater just announced its 75th anniversary season.
What a season. OMG.
Yeah. Yeah. 4 world premieres. They're like going back and doing some of the things that they couldn't do. So they've got a jam pack.
Like that Duncan Sheik musical.
So that's pretty cool. So here's, so they're doing Sweat, the Lynn Nottage show, and they're doing that in collaboration with the Ensemble Theater in October. High School Play, Nostalgia Fest in January. I'm just picking some at random. Noir in June. And our world premieres are High School Play, a Nostalgia Fest. American, spelled A-M-E-R-I-K-I-N. In February.
That was supposed to play last series, and it was part of their new play festival the year before.
It was indeed. Another world premiere was Born with Teeth.
And then Noir in July is also a world premiere. So good for Alley Theater.
So excited. I mean, let me tell you something. They have not stopped during this pandemic. They've been using their company actors and creating art. And yeah,
you know that,
what an exciting 75th season.
And you know, Nina Vance is doing the happy dance.
Yeah, I'm doing it with ya.
So, I don't want to spend a whole bunch of time on this because it's just, it's old news, but it's important news. And Jean-Claire Van Ryzen did an article in the, in Sightlines about the probability of the massive cuts in arts funding through the city of Austin. And the current thinking is it's going to be 93% less than it was. So to be clear, if you were getting $100, you're now getting $7. And a lot of companies, right or wrong, here in Austin depend upon city funding for their existence. So it's a big deal. And
it's a big deal. And I can't believe Jean-Claire is the only reporter to cover this. And I'm like, WTF, like, why is what's going on with that?
Well, because actually, so currently there is nothing been said. Everything is just conjecture at this point. They're going by.
I know that. But if people, you know, we as artists know this from being in the industry, but if the public doesn't know, how does the public say their voice and get involved? We can't keep things internal and not have a conversation with the whole collective world.
Exactly. But I will tell you, there's at least one other media outlet that is covering this, and it's a little show called Offstage and On the Air. We've talked about this a lot.
Yes.
And what can you do about it? Folks listening, you can write the city council. We are doing a push to redirect $20 million, $10 million over the next 2 years from the COVID funds that the city has to make up that shortfall. And city council has been hearing from us, and I think it's so important, especially since so many companies depend on that money to exist. You can get information about how you can, you can just get information at austincreativealliance.org. They're sort of running lead on this. So John Reedy over at Austin Theater Alliance has been working very, very hard advocating for the entire arts community. So mazel tov to John Reedy.
Excellent.
All right, we're going to leave with, what are we going to leave with? What's the song we're leaving with?
Welcome Bien.
From the Broadway musical
Cabaret.
And let's listen to Alan Cumming sing it, shall we?
Yes, I was about to say, can we do Alan, please?
All right, well, so we will look at, we will talk to you guys next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye, everybody.
Meine Damen und Herren, Mesdames et Messieurs, ladies and gentlemen, guten Abend, bonsoir, good evening, wie geht's, comment ça va?